Neal Stephenson, the best-selling science fiction author known for exploring topics as wide-ranging as cryptography and philosophy, has a new book called Fall, or Dodge in Hell. It's coming out on June 4th, and it draws in part on his experience in Seattle and the tech industry, including his work with companies involved in virtual and augmented reality and gaming. So what does the book say about where technology and society are headed? Alan Boyle, GeekWire's aerospace and science editor, read the book in advance of its publication, and he spoke with Neal Stephenson, and he joins us now to share highlights. Hi, Alan.
Hi.
So who is Neal Stephenson for the uninitiated?
Well, he's a science fiction author in a genre that some people call cyberpunk, very tech-oriented fiction. His first breakout novel was Snow Crash in the early 90s, and that prefigured the world of virtual reality and a totally connected internet network. And so he's written other books, as you say, about cryptography, one about a monastic order that tends this 10,000-year clock like the one that Jeff Bezos wants to build. And so this one gets into what you might call digital consciousness.
Ooh, very cool. And we're going to hear Neal Stephenson's comments about that whole theme when we play highlights from your interview with him. Now, I know Neal Stephenson from his interaction with the tech industry. I think the first time I saw him in a video was in a Kickstarter video for a game called Clang.
Yeah.
It was a sword fighting game.
A realistic
game
sword fighting game.
That
yeah.
Never got built, right?
It kind of went clunk. Clang went clunk. That they did raise some money and tried to do some development, but I think that played to one of Neal's obsessions to try to get the science and the physics right if you can. And he spent so much time on the physics that it turned out maybe not being such a fun project, and they had to abandon it eventually.
But he's also involved with some big established companies.
Sure.
What else does he do?
Well, right now he's chief futurist for Magic Leap, this company that's working on an augmented reality system. And he was the first employee at Blue Origin, which is Jeff Bezos' space venture.
See, I did not know that. So how did that happen? What's the backstory there?
Well, as described in Chris Davenport's book, The Space Barons, Neal had met Jeff Bezos at a dinner party, and they kind of fell into conversations about rockets, which was a shared interest of theirs, and they ended up launching rockets together, you know, these model rockets, and talking about what sort of space venture they could do. And so Neal encouraged Jeff to go for it and helped out in the early years trying to figure out whether there was some new way to launch payloads into space, some revolutionary technology that was out there waiting to be taken advantage of. And it turned out that they went to the standard chemical rocket model. But Neal used some of those way out technologies in his book Seven Eves several years ago.
So what should we know about his new book, Fall?
Well, as I said, it has to do with virtual consciousness, kind of creating a virtual world. What happens when we die? Are we actually living in a simulation, which is something that Elon Musk has talked about many times? And so the answer in this case is, well, yeah, maybe we could create a simulation and upload our brains so that we could spend our afterlife in the computer, basically inhabiting a virtual world. And so Neal explores that subject. He calls it a thought experiment.
In fact, during your interview, you asked Neal Stephenson about that angle of consciousness and this whole world that was created for the main character in the book. Let's listen to that now.
Well, I think if you are trying to talk about consciousness in a sort of serious academic way and delve into those issues philosophically, that you've got some heavy sledding. These are very complicated technical questions having to do with the biology of the brain and how that works, and also coupled to very complicated questions of philosophy and, you know, what is consciousness, what is reality, and tackling those topics in a serious academic style, I think, is a pretty daunting thing. And one of the advantages of working in fiction is that one has the freedom to just kind of make some stuff up and tell a story. I was kind of doing that as, you know, a thought experiment is, I think, a pretty reasonable way to describe it. Like, let's just take a particular set of ideas and run with it and see what kind of story that might turn into.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, it's not meant to be taken terribly seriously. So like, let me draw a contrast between it and say Seven Eves, where you know, I went to some efforts in the 70s to kind of see to it that I was paying attention to the orbital mechanics and the physics. I mean, I'm not saying the whole thing was completely nailed down scientifically, but it was rooted in at least the science of orbital mechanics. But that is not the case with Fall. You know, it's much more kind of freeform jazz as opposed to classical music.
I love that analogy, the jazz versus classical music. So tell us more about the plot to the extent that you can without spoiling it for us, Alan.
Well, I would say be prepared to hear a lot about turning up the dials on the Seattle tech scene in the beginning, and then be prepared for an exploration of American society in the middle, and then get ready for a little bit of Tolkien as this virtual world takes off, that there's a whole world that is a mashup of the Bible and ancient myth and J.R.R. Tolkien all swung together and mixed up. And sometimes it feels as if there are two books going on, but Neil told me that he tries to tie it all together. It's a book within a book. So get ready for a ride.
It sounds like it goes from the Amazon spheres to the Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. That would not be a bad way to put it.
So did you see in the book parallels between the present day Seattle tech industry and the characters or the companies in the book?
Oh, very much so. The whole idea of beginning startups and taking off of those startups and making your money by coming up with the social media app and where that gets you, and then the whole issue of fake news and obsession with social media and what is true, that all figures in the book. And in terms of the characters, you've got these new tech families that start up. We see what's going on with the Bezos family and the Paul Allen family. One of the big institutions is the Forthrest Family Foundation, which for me, it's kind of loosely modeled on what's going on with Paul Allen.
Interesting. So Allen and Bezos are not explicitly named in the book.
No, not at all.
But you, in fact, asked Neal Stephenson if this was a Romana Clef, which is a fictional work that's a thinly veiled story about people and situations in the real world. And he had a very specific answer to that.
I would push back a little against the idea of a Romana Clef or it being a kind of one-for-one mapping of fictional to real people. That's kind of not how I operate. You know, people love to see patterns in things, which is, you know, how we get conspiracy theories, I guess. But
yeah,
it's a lot more holistic than that. It's taking a range of different entities, you know, from that scene and kind of a knowledge of how things fit together in that scene, and then coming up with what I hope are plausible companies and plausible characters. It's not just taking a real company or a real person and, you know, thinly slapping a different name on them. But it does emerge from having been around Seattle for a long time during the growth of the tech scene here, and just, you know, being in contact with a lot of companies and people and places and situations that characterize that industry.
So was it overall a positive or a negative portrayal of the Seattle tech scene, or was it more balanced?
Yeah, I think Neil would probably say neither. I you know, it's basically positive, I suppose, if you think that progress and pushing the frontiers of technology are a positive thing. It can be overdone, and I think that you see a little bit of that in the novel as well. So just as the tech scene here has some positive and negative aspects to it, the same in the book.
Yeah, it sounds real.
Yeah.
Yeah, albeit fiction.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Neil Stephenson is also the chief futurist at Magic Leap, the augmented reality startup, as you mentioned. Did the book provide any insights or clues about his views of the future of VR or AR? And if so, what kind of things did you take away from that?
I think there were some insights into how VR is used, you know, in an augmented way to kind of guide people through reality. And one of the interesting technological twists is this technology called Veil, where people kind of veil their face so that they can defeat facial recognition and preserve their privacy.
Oh, that's
and
timely.
So, yeah. There are a lot of twists like that to it. He's very much a tech geek, and so that comes through in the book. And so the virtual world that is created kind of arises organically from the memories of the main character. And it's interesting to see how that just builds on top of everything. And in the end, you've got this whole world. It's almost like someone is creating Westeros or Middle Earth in a computer. I'm expecting someone to come up with a map of what the land from this book looks like.
It's interesting because as you talked about the Veil, I was immediately thinking Game of Thrones and the whole Arya Stark plot.
Through
the center of the series.
The faceless men.
Exactly.
And taking on the face of somebody else. In this case, it's a way to kind of defeat that method of stealing somebody's face, which you would probably see, in a sense, in facial recognition software.
Absolutely. Sounds like we got a startup idea right here
coming
out of this, the facial recognition defeating startup.
We might have to pay some royalties to Neil for the idea.
But then, at the same time, sci-fi has informed reality. I'm thinking of things like the Star Trek tricorder or the communicator, looking like the first flip phones, cell phones, the Motorola devices that everybody had back in the day. So it's not a stretch to see a vision like this in a fictional work become reality maybe decades later. Along those lines, you also asked Neil about creating virtual worlds and the extent to which his real world experience with technology informed his work in the book.
Well, I would say it's easier when you're just using words, but you know, technology gives us opportunities to also realize those worlds, on devices of various kinds. Doing that on some kind of technology takes it out of the realm of individual creative effort, which is where novelists live, and brings it into collaborative effort, which is a lovely place to be, much higher burn rate, requires a lot of specialization in terms of the different skill sets that have to be brought into play to make that work. So you're correct in saying that this is separate from that, but obviously there's some crosstalk, I guess.
Alan, I have to pause here and ask you, what was it like to talk to Neil Stephenson? Because I get the sense he doesn't do a lot of interviews. I know you're on the phone, but
no, he's not a reclusive person, but he really guards his time and his attention, and so he doesn't really like to reach out. He wants to kind of focus on what he's doing, except when a book comes out, then he's willing to kind of put himself forward and talk about his work and try to get the book off to a great launch. And then it's back to the writing studio and work on the next book.
It's interesting because listening to your conversation with him, even on the phone, I could tell he was giving real thought to your questions and being very careful about how he answered. And in fact, along these lines, later on, you asked him about social media and his use of social media, and he really gave a glimpse into his philosophy of this.
You know, my basic approach is to just be read-only. You know, I've got my, list of Twitter people I follow and Facebook people, and to the extent that I have time and I'm enjoying it, you know, I will consume those feeds, but I don't read mentions. I don't read PMs. I don't even know how to read them. I completely turn a deaf ear to any direct communications that might be headed my way on those channels.
Alan, you mentioned earlier that the book also gets into the political and the technological divide in the country. And it's interesting, both you and Neil grew up in Iowa. You're now immersed in this world of innovation in the Seattle region, and you asked him about that.
It really goes to the red versus blue divide in the country, and we both did grow up in Iowa. He was in western Iowa, which is, for me, that's the flat part of the state. I'm in eastern Iowa, which is closer to Wisconsin, maybe a little bit bluer. For both of us, you do see that divide a little bit between rural Iowa. I grew up on a farm, and the college towns, for example, Iowa City. And so there's a section in the book where some of the kids take a tour through Iowa, where the family that's at the center of this book originally came from, and get into the country. And it's almost like a caricature of the rural society where you have to go around in technicals and have your machine guns at the ready to make sure that you don't run afoul of the locals, and there's cross burnings and all that sort of thing. And so it's turning the dials up. It's not a realistic portrayal of what's going on with the red-blue divide, but it's meant to be, I don't know if you'd say it's a statement, but it's a parable that goes to how, even though we're divided into red and blue, both sides need each other.
Iowa is an interesting place in that it, you know, is really a purple state, and it goes, you know, they went for Obama, so it has large areas that are culturally influenced by kind of Scandinavian social democratic way of thinking about things. But, you know, it's in a little bit of a border zone, so sometimes it swings the other way. I think it's easy to paint with maybe too broad of a brush and say that one specific part of the country is, oh, that's a red state or that's a blue state. And in some cases, maybe that's true, but in a lot of areas, it's an extremely complex superposition of two different kinds of states. The kind of red statey areas need the blue statey areas for certain things, and vice versa. What I was hoping to do in that section was try to show that if you were to draw a border between red and blue, it wouldn't just be a band of blue along one coast and along both coasts and red in the middle, but it would be an incredibly complicated kind of fractal border that sort of snakes around through all of the different states and surrounds, you know, college towns and little high-tech centers. And somehow it all kind of works, or at least it kind of works so far.
So is this a cautionary tale in that way, looking at the extreme potential of what's happening today if it plays out into the future?
I think it's more an observation on what's happening, and in particular how modern media, social media, the network that in the book is called the Miasma, can contribute to that. Mm. And so I think if it's a cautionary tale, it's a cautionary tale about the potential for the way that we use media today to accentuate that red and blue division where really it's not justified and not useful.
You also asked him about doing sequels to his prior work versus creating new fictional worlds from whole cloth.
Right. That actually, in a sense, Fall is a bit of a sequel. It picks up some of the characters from an earlier novel, Reamde, which is transposition of the letters from Read Me. And so you see some of these same characters show up. But Neil says that he doesn't want this to be considered a sequel, that it's really a standalone story, and that it's interesting, his approach to sequels. I think we have a little bit of a clip on that.
I'm not opposed to it, but in general, I sort of feel like when I get to the end of a book and I'm thinking about which book to next write, the best approach is to look at every possible idea that's banging around in my head and pick the one that's got the most potential for growth and exploring new territory. If I ever get into a situation where I got nothing, then circling back to do a sequel to a previous book is perfectly okay thing to do. But at the end of the day, I can only write so many books during my career, and so I've got to make some choices, and I try to choose in favor of what will create the largest amount of newness.
It's interesting, and sometimes around here we reach too far for startup lessons, but it was hard not to hear one there. Because, you know, startups come out or companies come out with new products. Heck, media companies come out with new stories, new things to explore. And it's always a question. So should I be looking for something new or should I be...
Build on what you got.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. It was interesting to hear his philosophy. Obviously a very successful writer. In that way, the next question that you asked him was actually, in my mind, also something of a startup lesson. You asked how he handles praise and criticism.
One of the blurbs on the book here is something like from Lev Grossman, of all people, says, Neal Stephenson doesn't just seem like one of the best novelists writing in English right now. He seems like the only one. So that, you know, for a diffident Seattleite, that's got to, you know, bring a flush to your cheeks to hear that kind of praise.
Yeah, well, that's a very kind thing for him to say. I think that almost no good can come of paying attention to stuff like that, either positive or negative. Like, you know, if you pay attention to the positive stuff, it's going to screw you up in one way. And if you pay attention to the negative stuff, it's going to screw you up in a different way. But either way, it's not probably going to make things better career-wise. So
yeah.
I think it's best to ignore both positive and negative feedback.
Sounds like Russell Wilson from the Seahawks. You can't get too high on the highs. You can't get too
right.
low on the lows. Lev Grossman, many people will know him as the former lead technology writer for Time magazine. I've read many of his cover stories, but he's also a writer himself.
That's right. He wrote the Magicians series, which was turned into a show on Sci-Fi. And like Fall, kind of creates this whole magical world out of whole cloth.
Interesting. Should we expect there to be a TV series or movie coming out of Fall? Does it have that feel to it?
It kind of does, but I think that it's very complex. It might show up on one of these lists of books that you just couldn't make into movies because the mechanics of the plot are so complex.
Yeah, did they say that about George R.R. Martin too, though?
Yeah, they probably did, and about Lord of the Rings, so we'll see.
Big takeaways from the process of reading this book. I know you've read many of his books in the past. What it was like to speak with him. What are your concluding thoughts here?
Well, I heard so much about how private of a person he could be that I was very careful to be respectful of his time. I've tried to catch up with him through different channels over the years. I did have an interview with him, and I was actually to his house back in 1995 when he wrote The Diamond Age and wrote a story for the Seattle PI about that at the time. And so it's been a long time since I've had such a long conversation with him, and he's changed and I've changed. And so that's one thing to reflect on. The other thing is it really gets you thinking about this whole issue of digital consciousness and what is the nature of reality and where does that all go when we die? And so it's a very thought-provoking book, and I'm kind of looking for more reading that touches upon that theme, either fictional or nonfiction.
Have you found any new prospects for your...
I'm working on it, yeah. So I'll fill you in a future podcast.
That's great. What happens when you finish Fall? What you do next, I guess?
Is that right. The theme? What's the afterlife?
Exactly. Neal Stephenson's new book, Fall or Dodge in Hell, will be out June 4th. And Neal will be reading from the book and answering questions on Monday, June 3rd at Town Hall in Seattle. I assume that's part of a larger book tour.
Yes.
And we'll link to that event from the show notes on this podcast. You can also check out geekwire.com for the text of Alan Boyle's interview with Neal. And we'll be publishing an excerpt from the book as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Alan Boyle, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop. Thanks for listening to the GeekWire podcast.